We go back a long way. Good evening. It's the 25th of November, 2013. And yes, I'm ready. Everybody's asking me if we're ready. Yes, I'm ready. Everybody's ready. Okay, so I don't know why everybody's messaging. I got two messages just saying on Skype saying, "You about ready?" Yes, yes, I'm ready. I'm here. I'm online with Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, a fully 100% pure organic listener supported radio. And tonight my guest is Wingman, one of our very own, appearing at many roundtables, but actually located in dear old Blighty. So it is with great pleasure that I introduce fellow Brit at the other end of the island. How are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, hi JP. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all listeners.
Good morning. How are you? Well, yeah, well, it's kind of good morning for us, isn't it?
Yes.
That's great. So yes, now we've got, well, we're now, welcome to, No Borders Radio, and, to Wolf Spirit Radio and to everybody else, who's here, on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I'm going to go into the chat rooms in a second, so you'll see me appear as Wolfman J. You can ask questions, and you can possibly, maybe after a while, we can, you can join the call. So it's a really kind of unusual space that we're walking through tonight. And it's kind of almost hypothesis, theoretical kind of possibilities, probabilities, quantum realities and, other, things, which is basically, you know, don't knock the idea of where we're going with this, until we've kind of laid it out, really. You think that's a good approach to take to this, Wingman?
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Quantum entanglement, quantum reasoning even. And I think through reasoning you can get further along the path to ascertaining the truth, definitely.
Well, yeah, quantum reasoning. That sounds like a really good one because sometimes quantum mechanics or the ideas of quantum mechanics doesn't seem reasonable. You know, it's actually a world where anything is possible because we realize that there are boundaries to the reality that we find ourselves in, but it's only because we think that there are boundaries to the reality that we find ourselves in. And that's what we've been, you know, has been beaten into us. And people call that training or conditioning or education. I don't care what you call it. It's trauma based mind control and it's not real and it's not true. So quantum reality is much more possible, that we are able to conceive of and do just about anything that we want to, just, you know, whatever we can conceive of, we can do. So with that in mind, let us step out together onto the path, along the road, which starts quite a long way, long, what is it? In a distant land, far, far away, long, long ago. Do you want to take up the story? Explain it really, really, explicitly for everybody. Cause not many people may know the story. So, draw the picture for us, won't you?
Okay, I'm getting a bit of feedback before I start, from this end.
You will, as long as my mic's open, but, once it's not, it should, okay. So I just turn mine down so you don't get the feedback.
Yeah, what it is, I'm kind of a strange guy in respect to I remember past lives, and also normally in between those lives I do something which is associated normally with the Akashic Records, and what I find myself doing is accessing the Akashic Records. For those of you not aware of the Akashic Records, it's basically a kind of library of historical events and happenings, and so I will often reference this Akashic Records to either one, out of curiosity, of a particular entity and what they've been up to and how they've been thinking, in their lifetime, two, to re-remember something, or three, to, create a continuity of sorts. So those are normally the three reasons why I access the Akashic Records. So I've done it for several, entities, but one of them in particular that, has been, is a very, very solid memory is that of Osiris. And I have a relationship with Egypt whereby I have been an initiate in Egypt and I have used the King's Chamber, for ascension purposes. But that aside, the Osirian memory was very profound. We can certainly talk about that a little bit more, but basically, it's like, when I've accessed the Akashic Records, it's very, it's like jumping into a body. It's like possessing a body. And in that moment, you see through the eyes of the individual and you feel what they're thinking. It's like being them, being there, being them. And it's like a very accurate reenactment, it's either a reenactment or you're actually jumping into that aspect of the timeline, literally. I don't know which of the two, but suffice to say, it's very realistic. And when you're in the moment, you feel so much, you know, so much is going on. And so I have a short, two short snippets of memory with regards to Osiris. One is by what I presume is the Nile. And him talking to his brother Seth, and the other is also, funnily enough, in the King's Chamber again, but a separate memory to the one I just mentioned.
So you've got these fragments of memory. What do you think, where do you experience the feelings that are associated with that moment? For instance, let's start with the one when you're standing, or when Osiris is, it's good to separate it out and say, third person, like Osiris he, even though it's all,
yes,
it's all going to get a little more complicated later on, depending on who's actually listening to this, but the idea is that you have a certain feeling when you're standing by the Nile with Seth. Can you describe where you're experiencing it in your body? Can you describe sight, smells, sounds?
Funnily enough, smells are quite hard to carry in terms of memory, but it felt very intense. I can relate to some of it because, I've had what's called a Kundalini experience in this lifetime, which felt very similar to what Osiris was going through in that moment when he was talking to Seth by the riverside. It felt like he had reached a pinnacle, an energetic kind of pinnacle of sorts. And so he was feeling somewhat uncomfortable with that and not quite knowing where to go with it. And so that was of concern to him. It was as though Seth, when he was speaking to Seth, Seth offered him a type of solution to alleviate that kind of anxiety, and that was in the form of, and I didn't know this until afterwards, later on in life. Bear in mind, this is a memory that's been with me since early childhood and before that.
And have you been here several times? I mean, it's like, have you revisited that memory over and again? Is it just like it was just so intense that it imprinted on your memory?
Probably both, and that's one of the reasons I felt I had to access that particular memory for the sake of continuity. But, you know, so obviously at some level I feel an association with Osiris, and I still do very profoundly. And, you know, I'd go as far as to say that with regards to the Osiris soul group, that I'm part of that group, and hence the reason why I felt the need to access that memory to realize and re-remember that.
Okay, so now we were talking earlier, before the show, and this is why I wanted to talk to you, about this Osiris soul group. Because, well, the story goes, and you know, here's your, you know, if I were to take, like, the mythology, that, Osiris had to be cut, or Osiris was cut into pieces by his brother. Now, everybody is saying, oh, what a terrible man Seth was, therefore, for doing this to him. But the story that is coming across, that is coming from your side, which is a much more involved story and makes a lot more sense, is that Osiris was having, he went into the king's, actually, I don't want to steal your thunder, because the memory that you had of the king's chamber is a different moment, but it's the moment of activation, isn't it? Do you want to talk about that activation one?
I have two memories of the king's chamber, one from my own perspective and one from Osiris's perspective.
Yeah, so I'm talking about the Osiris perspective at this moment.
Right, so that seems to have come later in the timeline, so to speak. But, you know, the interesting thing about it's the memory of Osiris by the riverside, which again I presume is a Nile, is that there's a trunk involved. There's some kind of trunk or container involved, not much bigger than Osiris himself, funnily enough. And again, this was a strange memory for me because I have a memory of Osiris getting into the trunk on the water and actually feeling a sense of relief in that. And you know, this is it's a strange memory. And it wasn't until later on as an adult that I realized that was a tale, that was an actual tale. And so of course I suddenly realized, hold on a second, so this memory is, you know, this gave the memory that I had a new kind of, it was like an affirmation of sorts. That was quite pleasing.
I can imagine that will sort of drop a lot of things into place. And then also at the same time, I tell you what also is popping into place, possibly, is the story of Moses and the basket. Because again, that's another container floating in the Nile. Maybe there's a whole pattern about that.
Well, that was one of the thoughts of Osiris. Now again, I don't know the nature of what Osiris was able to tap into from a timeline perspective. But I don't know. It might have been me thinking about Moses. Or it might have been Osiris thinking about Moses. That's, I don't know. Again, I can't say. But Moses was a thought that came into my consciousness in that memory. As though it was like, oh, this happened to Moses.
Yeah. So perhaps some kind of container event happens in the lifetime of all the fragments. So where I was getting with this is that Osiris at the time was, he was an initiate practicing Kundalini events. And he was doing it in the pyramid. Like, you couldn't get more, you know, it's like the good conditions for the thing, you know, you can get better conditions for the event. And, he began by storing up chi in his body more and more and more.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is that at some point, something went wrong and started what you might call... Uh-huh. All right. Yep.
Back again?
Yep, sorry. There's a little blip there.
So just to reiterate, when he was by the Null, Osiris for sure had reached a critical mass of sorts.
And this is when he was, so he was discussing, presumably he was discussing this build-up of pressure inside him with Seth. That would be the conversation that we're having.
It's like the conversation, word for word, is that it's kind of on the tip of my tongue, but I can't quite go there. But because there was some other event they were talking about. I can't remember exactly, but part of it was to do with why he should try out this box. You know, just try it. I think I remember like Seth kind of saying, you know, just try it.
Yeah, so I wonder if it was lined with a material that kind of grounded you out, or grounded out Osiris. who is getting confusing.
Well, if you just kind of, from a referencing point of view, yeah. from my own perspective, I definitely see myself as part of the soul group that is Osiris. And a lot of, I've had a lot of clues in my life to support that, you know? Especially from a kind of, this fragmentation aspect of what happened with regards to Osiris is starting to make more and more sense in relation to what's happened in my own lifetime. And, you know, to some extent, I feel this is what needs to be explored. This is what we need to understand, because I do believe that Osiris was an ancient oversoul. How many oversouls there are, in this universe, I don't know, but I would imagine I could count them on both hands, for example. I wouldn't imagine I don't think there's that many, but Osiris was certainly a powerful, soul. What was it? Super soul kind of thing. And so this fragmentation aspect of it feels very, very relevant to not just myself, but the reality that we're in. Because as I see it, I think Osiris has a, some sort, because I can relate it to my own consciousness and being part of his soul group, he has some sort of reorganizational capability, super capability. And that is that not only is he kind of entangled dimensionally with the timelines that are within this universe, but he's also entangled with other super souls and soul groups. And I think if he can piece himself together, because part of the story is that he was chopped up into pieces, and so we can talk about that a bit more, and the implications of that. It feels like, you know, much of this there seems to be great importance in understanding what was going on there with regards to that fragmentation, of that oversoul or, you know, super soul.
So, poor old Osiris. Now, Osiris, when he was whole, let's say, you know, before this this nuclear event happened, would you say that he was actually practicing some kind of Kundalini yoga or some form of practice like that that would raise his consciousness somehow, and why was he doing that? Would you know?
I don't know, and I can't say, but what I can say, it felt, because there's another memory that just a very, very faint one of there being some sort of festival or celebration, and it's like the feeling he's getting is a convergence, that's the right word, an energetic convergence, and you can feel it getting stronger and stronger and stronger, to the point that in this particular celebration, he's starting to see causal action and reaction. He's starting to see his energetic causality manifesting before him.
So he's thinking things and they're happening before him.
he's moving, he's thinking, and they're manifesting before him. The reaction side is manifesting instantaneously before him in this particular memory of a situation.
Right, things are coming together.
And that started to concern him.
Yeah, because he had not practiced training his thoughts.
Yeah,
He didn't know that that's what that needed to happen.
I would go with that, yeah.
Yeah. So, here's the thing. It's like, you know, if I give you a machine that manifests your thoughts, you put this cap on, and you start freaking out, and it creates freaking out things that make you freak out further.
You get feedback. You get kind of feedback.
Negative feedback.
Yeah, exactly.
And that can be quite frightening, and if you're now in a place where everything you think manifests, then you frighten yourself, and so on and so on.
Yeah. In fact, and I can't say this 100%, but it feels like the conversation that he was having with Seth was with relation to that previous event, that celebration, what happened at that celebration. And Seth seemed to, you know, it's like Seth had a good I don't know, maybe Seth was with him for many lifetimes, because it seems as though Seth kind of understood aspects of what was going on. I don't know, his knowledge seems very, he seemed very solid, you know, I don't know, anyway, there was comfort. I remember, I found comfort in Seth's understanding of what was happening.
Yeah, well, it sounds like that they were, you know, actually, before there was initiation, you had to be self-initiated. And, you know, there was no manual. There was no secret society. It was, the secret societies would have come afterwards, having discovered that that's what could possibly happen. So, okay, so Seth is understanding what's going on. He's got an understanding of why these things are happening.
I'd say that.
Okay, so, now, Osiris, are we talking a pharaoh, or is he a prince, or, you know, is he in charge of everything, or is he just, is he still, like, within the group of other people, or is he sitting on the throne all the time?
I don't understand the question.
What level, what was Osiris? Was he a king?
A pharaoh, yeah.
He was a pharaoh?
Yeah.
Was he, like, one of the first pharaohs?
I think he's one of the earliest ones, for sure, yeah.
And, right, interesting. So he was being... maybe he'd discovered a device. No? Or some knowledge. Because he must have figured out how to do this thing. This Kundalini yoga.
I think it was just his nature.
Okay, so it would be something that he would have known in a past life and was really...
Yeah, but it was probably more remembrance or re-energization, if anything.
Yeah. So, okay, so there he is, and he's starting to manifest in front of him. He is... And these are my thoughts, right? This is what's happening to humanity as a whole right now. This process is going to happen to humanity.
Well, I think it already has happened. I think that's the state we're in. In other words, so what part do you mean?
Well, the experiences that Osiris was experiencing Kundalini experiences, right?
Which essentially is like an energetic coming together, yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, in Frankenstein when he grabs that great big knife switch, that, you know, the big switch with the handle that you kind of slam down and all the lightning bolts connect. And, there is a way of wiring the human body different so that it can carry a lot more energy. And that we've been kind of fitted with the weaker fuses, let's say, so that it doesn't happen. Probably for our own safety, you know, because like this. So it might be, you know, what are the lessons that Osiris has to give us? And
well,
are there lessons that Osiris's story gives us?
Okay, so certainly if I cross correlate the Osirian memory with my own kind of shamanic journeys in this lifetime, I would imagine that some of the supernatural experiences I've had, Osiris would have also experienced. And part of that is the is synchronicity that bypasses our normal timeline. So this makes me think that there is, from a universal culmination point of view, that Osiris is part of the he feels like it feels like there's a reorganization that needs to take place from an energetic perspective. And I have seen a small snippet of that manifested in my lifetime in the form of me energetically organizing myself, and that's resulted in a manifestation around me that's synchronized, that's become organized or fallen into place so as to create a perception that I've been able to read of being synchronistic. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Which makes me think that Osiris, which I'm a part of, the group, that's a group I definitely feel a part of, there's other pieces of Osiris that are out there.
Oh, absolutely. And
they need to come together energetically in this kind of organizational synchronistic. Now, the synchronistic side of it is incidental, but the point is that when that energy comes together, the synchronicity happens through time. This is what I've experienced in my own experiences, is that when I've energized, I see synchronicity and it bypasses the time. I've seen synchronicity, for example, happening with the music I'm listening to or the TV that I'm watching or the sounds outside. So this has given me a small picture or insight into perhaps the nature of the Osirian super soul.
So let's have a look back at Osiris, right? So there he was sitting in the king's chamber,
This is like a fast forward now the memory you're talking of now.
Yeah. Well, how long?
So it's like he gets in the trunk and he floats off, and that's where the memory cuts off. He floats off down river, and he's comfortable, and he's like, oh, this is all right. This feels a bit better. I can deal with this.
Yeah.
You know.
All right. So that, I mean. So basically, this is like it's sinking away his energy. It's wicking away the excess energy that he's feeling. Is that it?
I would imagine if he's feeling comfort, then to some extent, yeah, it could be.
Yeah, he was like too hot, and this is
too hot. Yeah,
yeah, and this is it's drawing the energy. It, you know, it's like a cool box.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good
analogy.
And
it's using the water as a heat sink.
Pretty good. Maybe as a capacitor of some sort, yeah.
Well, just as I'm imagining a box that is lined with metal, the metal goes all the way down to the outside and dangles in the water. So maybe like a gold foil or something like
that. Yeah, I'd go with that.
And around something that will float, like some kind of canoe or something like that. Or a balsa wood box or something like that.
From memory, if it's just like a box, a floating box.
What colour was it? Can you remember the colour?
Funnily enough, a lot of my memories are not that colourful, so no, I can't.
Dark?
I can't say. It's like shadows memories. It's like in black and white, so I can't really say for sure.
So was it at night?
Again, I can't say. I don't even know if it was day or night.
Uh-huh. Was it warm?
Wasn't cold.
Mm-hmm. And did you have clothes on? Did Osiris have clothes on?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Did he have to take them off to get into the box?
No.
All right. Okay. So here's the image, right? Of a very of increasingly hot person. Now we saw this in Heroes, didn't we?
Oh wow! Yeah.
Yeah. And that there were people who would. There was one guy who could make other people hot. He would throw flame. He was one of the bad guys. He was a bank robber.
That's right.
And but these are all used. This is all like uses of chi. You see these masters in the East, and they master the chi, and they can direct it, and they can heal people with it, and they can throw somebody across the room without touching them. You know,
yeah,
using chi, and this has to be the same stuff, right? And if Osiris is one of the descendants of the Anunnaki, he would have a naturally higher body electricity than the regular human.
Well, undoubtedly, so much so that it manifests as reality.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like...
What changes his reality, yeah.
It's a one-man holograph projector, because he's...
Yeah.
So is there a possibility that in previous times, Osiris was again divided? The Osiris that we see in Egypt is the descendant of another fragment.
I know, now you're getting onto something. That seems to make sense. That seems to fit.
The holographic.
In fact, this is probably why navigation was so important to the ancient Egyptians. Navigation not just after death, but during life as well.
Mm. Orientation. You need to know which is which, and what is what, and who is who, and absolutely, who's a clone. I mean, basically, what we're talking is that Osiris Xeroxed himself, as it were.
Well, Xeroxing was very important to the Egyptian in terms of maintaining integrity, genetic integrity.
Yeah. Interesting. So, my hypothesis here, and it's like, this is so far out that, you know, and we're talking quantum reality, which is anything's possible. So let's say anything's possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that there was a point where Osiris was so uncontrollably hot that he would go nuclear, you know, and maybe even blow up the planet, you know, that nuclear.
Do you know, that sounds crazy, but I go with that. I know.
And so, the energy source, I mean, basically, when something like that happens, you have to hit the off switch. You have to remove the plus from the minus. And so he probably had to cut you in two. And then, again, each one of those would then form a plus and a minus. So he probably had to cut you in two again, and again and again and again, until it was like each piece could be handled like nuclear waste, and then they shipped that to the four corners of the earth, as far away as possible from each other. How's that?
Yeah. Sounds about right.
So Seth wasn't a bad guy. He was doing the best thing.
He knew, or what he felt he needed to do to contain the situation.
Yeah. Because that's, you know...
I don't know how he would have known that, though. We're talking about ancient wisdom here, so...
That's, you know, right. You know, we're also talking about Atlanteans.
Yeah.
People who have been through the Atlantis, they had the technology, they had the knowledge, more or less, just about surviving, how to use the technology. You know, you imagine a flat screen TV in 400 years time, you know. Where's the think on off switch? What's that black square on the side? I don't know what you do with that.
Yeah, exactly.
So like the knowledge of how to use the technology would gradually go away as the generations die off. But he was like early generation. He was probably quite long lived. He would have been long lived. So the idea is that Seth was kind of cool about the whole thing.
Yeah.
That he knew exactly what he had to do, and it wasn't like he freaked out, but maybe he was like just in shock and, you know, he freaks out later.
Yeah, he might freak, but in that moment, in that memory, he was super cool.
Hmm.
It was like, it was almost as though he knew if he did anything untoward or untrusting or anything to ignite anything, you know, to frustrate the situation.
Yeah.
It was as though he knew he couldn't do that. He knew he should, he knew he had to maintain his coolness so that Osiris wouldn't react in an untoward way.
Yeah. He had to be walking on eggshells.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting.
And there's a reason for that, because energetically speaking, from the, from Osiris's point of view, causality was, you know, as you energetically, causality, you know, as you increase energetically, causality increases. So if it was a negative reaction, negative causality would have unfolded. And if it was a positive causality, or, you know, not positive, but something to accelerate his energetic amplification, then it, like you say, could have blown. So yeah. It was a very delicate situation.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's almost like having somebody who's like sort of on Uber PMS. you know, here's some more chocolate, dear. You know, have some wine. Yeah, you feeling what? Can I get you something?
eggshells.
Can I make you more comfortable?
Yeah, eggshells.
Yeah. So that, I mean, when you say that there's a... All right, so hang on a second. The memory that you have is that he's getting hot, and he's in this. He gets in the box and mm-hmm. he puts away. And that's the last thing you remember.
And then there's a Moses reference thing, and then that's the last thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're floating in the box, and presumably there's this great sense of relief.
Yeah.
And how long do you stay in the box?
I don't know. Don't know, but the next memory is it back in the pyramid, the Cheops King's Chamber.
Mm. And do you have a feeling that that's a long time between those two events?
No idea whatsoever what the passage of time is in between those two events.
All right. So now we're in the chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Going on. Are you laying in the box still? Are you in the sarcophagus?
No, I'm in the middle of the King's Chamber, on some sort of platform mm-hmm. of sorts, and stretched out.
Comfortable?
Yeah, and just coming around, but as the Osiris is coming around, he's someone's performing oral sex on him.
All right.
You know, that's just that was the arousal. I know it sounds strange, but yeah.
Yes, so he's certainly coming around. So meanwhile, so you've been. Can you feel your body? Obviously, there's something that is drawing your attention.
Yeah, yeah. No, it feels all like, you know, back together again. Yeah.
Uh huh. Okay. And then what? or is
and
it
then,
not,
and then,
not possible to transmit it on?
No, and then Osiris is mounted by the individual, the female that's in there with him. They're the only two in there.
Does she feel familiar?
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. Who is she to you?
Familiar, that's about all I can say.
Is it like she's a member of your family?
I don't know, just familiar, like a partner, familiar.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Not concubine or anything like that. And So that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Memory.
Were you still hot?
I get you. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I would say so. Yeah. I mean, actually, yeah, it felt like luminosity was, it was a lot of luminosity in there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'd say yes.
Hmm. And, I mean, not wishing to have some ancient history, historical pornography, but, are there any other things that you can describe from that place? Like, smells? Sounds?
Well, because probably when I was younger, yeah, if someone had asked me the question when I was younger, I probably could probably answer that.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's a fainter memory now, I can't.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. So, from those memory fragments,
mm-hmm.
you have presumably reconstructed a narrative. It's like archaeology, you know, it finds two fragments of a skull and, like, where are they on the skull and where does the, you know, where do these fragments fit in, and you can recreate the skull from the fragments, you know, see what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think whatever was taking place back in the King's Chamber after that event on the Nile, which I presume is the Nile, mm. there was obviously some sort of seeding taking place with regards to the partner in relation to Osiris. I would imagine because of my second memory in the King's Chamber as an initiate, that Osiris then ascended there after that event. Because it did feel very, like I say, it felt like it was still hot, you know, energetically. So I would imagine, I'm just assuming here that he did ascend immediately after that into towards the Orion Belt,
which is essentially ascension. Is where we're headed. This is what you're sensing as well, isn't it?
Yes. Well, in that moment, yeah, it was the energetic ascension of Osiris. Yeah, from probably into a realm where that him being nuclear was okay. If you get me, you know.
Yeah. Well, that his energy level was more suited to that environment.
Yeah.
And probably to us, it would seem like he turned into a star.
Wow, definitely possible, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, yeah, that seems to gel quite well.
Yeah, well, that's what they say ascension is, isn't it?
Right.
And that's what we are all starting to feel growing in our hearts. This light, this great light from inside. Yeah. So, presumably, that's what the secret societies were originally for. That they would recognize somebody who was starting to go through this process. I would imagine that someone like Osiris would take scribes and describe the process, and write books on his process.
Yes. In fact, so there is a feeling. It's not a memory, but it's a feeling of a very close relationship between Osiris and his scribe, yeah.
Mm. So, when you've got that, then there would be a kind of blueprint for the process so that people could go through it more gradually than Osiris did. So
which is probably how the Book of the Dead was pieced together, yeah.
Yeah.
And why it was pieced together.
Mm. Hmm. Yeah, so let's say, you know, let's go back to the river. Osiris gets in the box.
Yeah.
And the box floats away. Or floats into the middle of the Nile.
Yeah.
Right? gets really hot, bubbles away. And perhaps even eventually causes a bit of a problem. So they have to fish him out the river and see what they can do. And then eventually they'll have to chop into pieces and send them all to various parts of the thing. Presumably still radioactive, presumably.
Yeah, definitely.
Probably still jiggering around because it's so full of life energy.
Yeah.
That all these pieces are alive.
Yeah.
May even regenerate into a whole new body.
Well, this is the, you know, we're talking about this.
Is that possible?
Well, I do truly believe that Osiris is part of a massive soul group. The overlord of a massive soul group, so to speak. And, so each piece in itself will have contained a massive consciousness. Which has been probably fragmented itself over time into many souls, you know? So it feels as though, I say this because, you know how we associate with Creator ourselves, and it's like we have a blueprint within us. It's the same with me and Osiris. I feel as though part of my objective is obviously related to Osiris's, and that objective seems to be to learn how to come to back together.
Pull yourself together, man.
Pull myself together, yeah. to reach that state of organizational ability. And I say that because I feel as though Osiris is one of his roles is as an organizer, an energetic organizer. It seems as though he is able, and again, like, I've had insight into this in my own lifetime, that there's an ability there to energetically organize on a huge scale. You know, harmonically. I'm talking about harmonic reorganization. And it seems as though that is entangled throughout time. That organized. In other words, just like when Osiris was in that celebration, in that big hall or building, and having his celebrations, he saw the action reaction. Similarly, energetically, I think Osiris is able to energetically organize things on a big scale so that his action leads to an immediate reaction, where regardless of where it is in time, like a kind of fate, but in like synchronicity, fate. It's like that, but it's entanglement. It's energetic entanglement, but it goes through time and things. It's quite complex.
Somebody once said, or somebody recently said, synchronicity is who you are. The cause of synchronicity is you.
Yeah, that's
interesting. Anyway, meanwhile, or meantime, or meanwhere, or. Osiris is chopped up into little pieces.
Mm.
Little bits, transported, still warm, probably buried in rivers or somewhere like that. Cause all the pieces were locked away. He was like, one of these, in a science fiction film, they've got this ancient technology and it's in three pieces. And if the three pieces come together, it becomes this dangerous weapon.
But yeah.
On their own, they're very harmless.
Yeah.
So, what would Osiris therefore think of the New World Order?
Well, firstly, probably not really think much about the word world, because he's the universal chap. So it'd be New Universal Order, if anything. But I think in terms of, the terminology. I think he'd probably side more with the term of a reorder, a universal reorder or reculmination or something like that. But the term itself, New World Order, yeah, I don't know. Probably, I don't know.
Well, what I'm talking about is the Nazi World Order, not the New World Order, but the Nazi. I mean, would a world under Osiris be better or worse for the regular person than being under the rule of Obama and the cabal?
Well, I think under the Assyrian energy, what you're talking about is pretty rapid ascension from a world and probably universal point of view. So that I do feel as though that Osiris is a very skilled organizer of the entangled nature of our reality. So although we might think we are to some extent kind of fragmented and dispersed and we haven't come together, he's like a conductor. It feels as though he's a conductor of that. In other words, if he can re-culminate and reorganize, there will be a domino effect of that. So, and that certainly ties in with my own consciousness as well, but I'm trying to be kind of impartial, but I can't be impartial because I tie in with Osiris's consciousness, so that's what it feels like.
Yeah, so basically what we're saying is, you know, if Osiris was to get things together, would the lot be better for the human race? Would we be less oppressed? Would it be, you have to give the Osiris manifesto, my friend.
Yeah, no, it would be incredible. It would feel harmonic and it would feel pretty cool, pretty darn good. Because basically what I'm talking about is harmonic organization, you know, and culmination. And I'd love to be able to find the other pieces of Osiris so that I and those other pieces can come together and be the catalyst that I feel that we are.
So I would like to propose to you that you start the Osiris project and that you actively look for the other pieces.
Right, and no, this is interesting because
I would say that this conversation is the call out, really, wouldn't you?
I have learned language, and I have, on my travels in this lifetime, I have learned a language of energetic momentum, which I've experimented with and works synchronistically immediately with my environment. And I feel as though on some level, that's what would lead to the pieces. It feels like a magnetism of sort. So I'm one piece of the magnet, and it feels as though using this language it's a language in itself, but it's like an energetic language. And it's like you find the other pieces of the magnet, and then you find the other person, and as the pieces come together, you magnetize. And it's like, you remember that film with the Schwarzenegger, what was it called?
Terminator. Yeah.
Remember when
Iron Man.
Yeah, well, you remember the Iron Man, when he shoots the Iron Man, it was in the furnace. There's a furnace, and he freezes the iron bloke, doesn't he? And he kind of fragments and falls into pieces, and then slowly, as it melts, as the temperature comes out of frozen into normal room temperature, the pieces start to come together. That's what it feels like that needs to happen.
So a kind of re-emergence,
yeah,
yes, of this energy, which so.
And I know its power. I've seen its power. Because when I do this, when I've experimented with this altered state, and this energetic altered state, and I allow myself to become gravitational, is a kind of terminology that seems to work well. Allow myself to be gravitationally drawn to the consciousness that I'm tapping into. Then this is when I experience immediate synchronicity. And this has happened even with recorded media. Recorded media has synchronized with me in that moment. Which makes me think this goes through, you know, our normal linear timeline. It's powerful. It's really powerful. And if that's just one piece that's happening, if that's just, you know, if it's just one piece of Osiris that's happening to, imagine all the pieces coming together and what might happen as a result of that. You know, we're talking big, big, big energy.
So, we're going to be going to a break in a minute. Or we should be. if you can hear the kettle boiling in the background. We're going to be going to a break in a minute, and I'd like you to hold that thought about universal languages. It's a fascinating subject, the use of language and the use of telepathy in the universe, that I've no idea where the commercials are coming. They should be here by now. This is so weird. Well, let's just carry on until we hear the guitar.
It definitely feels as though this line of thinking, this line of experimentation, this line of experience that I've taken, that I can tie in with this other perspective from Osiris, it feels like this is the right thing to do. In other words, as a species... Oh, here's the music. Come back.
Hold the thought. Don't go away, everybody. We're carrying on after the break. Oh, yes. 100% organic, homegrown, freshly reared, hand-carved, organic. Have I said organic? It's listener-supported Revolution Radio, No Borders Radio, WolfSpiritRadio.com. Here we all are. And I'm here with Wingman. I feel like I'm in the RAF. So, we were talking about the project.
Yes.
So, take it away.
So, like I say, from my own experience in the Osirian consciousness that I entered, what I feel is needed, and this is basically ties into what I feel is the nature of evolution, and that is to facilitate the movement towards critical mass, which I think is what the human species needs to do. And so implicitly I feel as though, yes, I do like the term New World Order to some extent, but I think to some extent it's also been hijacked. But it feels like we do need to reorder ourselves and create a paradigm whereby we can learn who and what it is we gravitate towards, the like mind. You know, we need to start gravitating towards like minds so that we can achieve that energetic collectiveness that works. And so once you have these pockets of energetic collectiveness that work around the globe, that are harmonized and can maintain their own energetic fields, you see, then you have the beginnings of the reorganization to facilitate the movement towards critical mass, which, and from there on in, is when we move around the universe. So from our own species critical mass bubble, we can navigate towards maybe another star system, and so on and so forth. And there we organize ourselves to harmonize with what's around us, and so on and so forth. So the process continues. And this is what I think is the nature of the evolution itself, is to harmonize, to come together in such a way as that you're energetically harmonic, and then you move on to the next stage of evolution, you see. And it goes on and on. Until such a time as you decide that you want to fragment again and experience a new reality.
So let's just talk about harmonic. What harmonic means, brothers and sisters, is not uniformity. Harmonic means that everybody is in their own space. Like when you got the Beach Boys. They each sang their own melody. None of the melody that they sang coincided with anybody else's melody. They didn't step on each other's toes and try and sing the same note. They were always in step with each other, and yet they were individual and unique. And I think this is one of the ways that we can, you know, it's like somehow everybody marches to the beat, and it's whose beat is it that we march to? Yeah. Are we marching to a drum, or are we marching to the beat of our hearts?
Well, what I envisage unfolding, hopefully, and hopefully we do go in this direction, is that there will be many pieces, harmonic pieces, so many groups that have harmonized it, and they have their own song. Each group has their own, each collective has their own song. But as they move towards each other, they'll realize that they'll share some of, you know, that they themselves will synchronize with each other in such a way as to create a new song and a new collective. And so, you know, it's that field is where the magic is, and how you move with that. So it could be that it starts from nation, you know, within a nation, and then you get your collectives within a nation, and then you start to realize, hold on a second, we need to cross the pond here and harmonize with aspects of this culture or that culture, and you know, and this works and that doesn't work. And so it's like a reshuffling that I see needs to take place for the sake of human evolution. And it does need to happen, because this is what it's all about. Evolution is what it's all about. Anything that's contrary to this is devolution. And that's the wrong direction. So we should be doing everything we can to understand what is the nature of human evolution. And we don't have many templates. We have some clues from ancient history as to the nature of the energy and how this, and chi, and how this has a part to play. But for the most part, you know, we should be using our feelers, and we are using our feelers. And if we can understand that, you know, we need to facilitate a paradigm that allows us to be free, that allows us to move around freely, you know, so that maybe, you know, we don't need to stay in the same home. Maybe we can turn our homes into more like hotel rooms, so that I can go from your house to someone else's house to wherever I need to go to facilitate whoever it is, or whatever group or individual consciousness I need to gravitate towards, to facilitate that energetic harmonic that feels right. Feels like the right thing to do and the right place to be. And then it's when you're in that situation or position for a while, then you understand what the next step is. Then you can work out, where do we go next? And if you have a paradigm where you have the freedom to move, because you've got to bear in mind, a lot of the restrictions that we have are involved with our freedom, our ability to move. You know, you've got to show your passport here. You've got to say what you're doing here. What's the nature of your business or pleasure? Why are you here? Why did you come here 3 months ago? You know, that's all bullshit. You know, all the border controls need to just disperse, or certainly be better understood. And so the movement, we need to facilitate movement, free movement, so that I can go to Canada, the States, Japan, China, wherever it is I need to go as an individual or a collective, to facilitate the energetic amplification of that collective that I'm involved with. Does that make sense?
It certainly makes sense to me. And we might need to kind of expand on that a little bit, but let's start with that. Let's start with, you know, what does that mean? That means that there are times when the little battery supercomputer that you are needs to go and find a USB port somewhere on the surface of the planet where the data that it has needs to be downloaded into. And once you've downloaded it, you know, and that might take 2 or 3 weeks, and me, you know, in the meantime, you're hanging out talking to people, and, you know, this energy is coming through the chakras in your feet into the land, and the land is being nourished by that, and gaining in its consciousness, because it has a consciousness. Then you move on to the next place, and people know who you are, and they'll be drawn to you. So that's... this is a wonderful picture of how we can be, because that then takes us into the next realm, which is, as you say, to take us as a globe, as a collective body of humanity, and to go and be somewhere in order to download the evolutionary information that we've gathered so far.
Yeah, and that obviously includes Gaia and Mother Earth herself and her energy. And what she's learned, and we obviously will take that with us. But it's, you know, it's not until we achieve that harmonization that you have the vessel. You see, what we need to do is create the vessel. And to do that, you know, if we don't create the vessel, and we have to go there, because if we don't, guess whose order might come, you know, we might be involved in a disharmonic or a malevolent order instead. And you know, so we have to do this for the sake of our own well-being and evolution and ascension. You know, it's not a question of, you know, should we or shouldn't we? You know, we have to do it, because if we don't, the flip side of that is something much more hellish, literally, you know, for us.
Absolutely. So here we are. This is, I mean, in terms of organization, this is exactly what the ancient teachings were about. And you can look at it as if it was chakras. That each chakra has a specific purpose, a specific function. And as we were talking earlier, an organ is a thing that does one thing. like, you know, your kidneys do that filtering thing. Your stomach does that kind of munging up thing. And your teeth do this one thing. And, you know, your brain does this. Each organ has its function. I'm starting to think that the brain is also a little collective of beings as well. But each organ has a function, a purpose, and that they're related in a particular way. And that reflects the chakras that they connect to, and the chakras have each has a purpose too on a higher level, but, you know, it's related to the physical plane purpose, you know. So for instance, you know, your sacral center is connected to the organs of generation, and on the higher level, that's the level of relationship. So, you know, your what's known as the second chakra or the sacral chakra, is to do with relationship. And, the throat center, the physical throat, the thyroid, they're all to do with the, regulation of the body and communication. And, that's the, non-physical side. It's, you know, communication and, higher mind and, higher consciousness and connections. So, you know, people like who make connections with lots of people, that's a third ray activity. So when you start evolving, the first things that start relating is the sacral and the throat. So what we're talking about is that the relationship that the sacral center has with the throat center comes into what's known as a right relationship, which is that the higher one takes precedence. Instead of it being all serving the sacral center, it serves the throat center. It serves communication. It serves higher mind. It's not as selfish. So can you see how that may apply to the race as a whole? Or am I just talking gibberish?
No, definitely. And, you know, using the analogy of Osiris being in fragments, you know, it's not right to say we are one, because the whole point is that we need to work towards oneness so that we can create the vessel to move on to the next stage. And if we can understand that, then we can work towards how we achieve that and what paradigm we create and what new order we create to facilitate that very important process. Because at the moment we are dispersed, we are fragmented, we are kind of in a chaotic state of being. We don't have the freedoms that we should have. We're not exercising the freedoms that we should be exercising. And it's not until that happens that we are able to experience the freedom that is involved, the energy that's involved with facilitating and realization of the freedoms that we should have. And that includes, importantly, movement and the ability to collectivize our will. And it's not until that happens that when that happens, we'll start to realize we remember things, you know, and we'll start to realize, oh my gosh, you know, this makes sense. This resonates. This feels right. This feels good. This feels joyous. This feels new and novel. And this feels like the right direction and the right thing to be doing. And like I say, that can only happen in a new paradigm that understands the nature of facilitating movement and free will and manifestation and speed and technology and insight and wisdom and all these wonderful things that we should be realizing.
Well, that's right. Well, as many people have said, many years, you know, for many years, they say, oh, at the end of the day, we're all one, you know, and I say, yeah, but it's not the end of the day yet. So that kind of locks into what you were saying earlier.
Yeah, I want to slap them with a wet fish when they say that, because it's like, no, we're not there yet. The whole point is to get there. And when we are all one, and don't get that, you know, that terminology doesn't mean just one thought and one mind. It means a cohesive, organizational, spherical kind of stable unit. You know,
a harmonically ordered,
a harmonic
unified
system.
Being.
Yeah, no, it's not just one note. When you think of what you know, it's not just one note. We're talking about it's many notes, many notes coming together to create a symphonic harmonic, you know.
So again, that's something that is like, it starts off with one single thing allowing itself to fragment, like the one note that then breaks up. It's like a light going through a prism. Breaks up into its harmonic quantities.
Absolutely.
Each of which has qualities like the original. And so on and so on and so on.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, that's what we're talking about. You're talking about the nature of things now.
Yeah.
You know, you're really diving in there.
We go deep.
But essentially,
yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That is the nature of things. The nature of things is the one divides, first of all, into two. Now, I want to add a caveat here, that the whole thing has happened as a result of the original division. But then we find ourselves subject to the big problem, which is divide and rule. We've also been divided by these divided processes. And that's another reason why humanity is fragmented. Like, the fragmentation created something that fragments things even more.
Well, there's a reason that term exists, divide and rule. Think about it.
Yeah.
If you're dividing the whole, as you know, then you're able to manipulate it and rule it. And this is the selfish nature of reality, you see, taking hold. And this is what we've allowed to take hold, because we've been in a state of confusion and forgetfulness. Insofar as the nature of things. It's not until we understand the nature of things, and we do know the nature of things, what, you know, for those of us that have tapped into the more spiritual side of things, slowly but surely, we do start to realize the nature of things when you identify with your own persona and what's happening in your heart and mind, then you start to get it, and we need to start getting it more and more and more as a species, because until we do that, it needs to happen, you know, facto, you know, absolutely de facto it needs to happen, because otherwise you have the divide and conquer continuing, and all that will facilitate is confusion and forgetfulness.
So if we all consider that Osiris needs to pull himself together. Yeah, pull yourself together, Osiris.
Yeah. But he's just one piece of the puzzle, you know?
Yeah.
There are probably many, like him out there.
Yeah. Fragments of. I've spoken with Andrew Bartzis about this, about one soul occupying many, many bodies. In order, you know, and they've probably done that having seen what Osiris did. I'm fascinated, like what bit of Osiris grew into wingman? What bit of Osiris? I am convinced that you will find these people over internet radio. You know, I think you should just start your show and start pulling your guests in who are another part of yourself. Anybody you ever imagined, even that famous actor, whoever he might be. Go for it.
Another piece of the puzzle. Definitely. But, I feel such an urge to manifest this, because I know it's not just for me. I know it's for every other, like, being, human being out there that wants to realize their own ascension, wants to manifest their own ascension process. And you know, we're very shy, it seems, of, like I say, exploring our freedoms and experimentation as to how to best. Actually, I want to tell you a story. I was in a place in Avebury, a particular site, a Stone Circle site, and I saw about a group of five people, and they were in this area, and it's very energetic, and I have this ability to tune into directional flow with regards to energy. And I was looking at this group, and I saw them shuffling around, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And instantly I noticed when one person kind of shuffled or moved their feet a little bit, the person like in the rest of the group would adjust in reaction to how that previous person had adjusted. And suddenly I realized, they probably didn't realize they were doing it, but suddenly I realized, yeah, I get it. They're maintaining their energetic field. Now, it's a subconscious thing, albeit, I would imagine, but that was kind of an insight into what needs to happen. You see, they were maintaining the field, and as one person moved, another person would shuffle around to not break the structure that they were in, the bubble that they were in, kind of thing. And so that was a good insight. And if we could learn to do that physically, because I think, you know, that's when the magic happens, is in the physical. That's when you start to see, and you have this important thing called group affirmation, which is, yeah, everyone in that group gets it, and that makes it more real than if an individual gets it. You know, it's like, wow. You see, you look at the person next to you, you say, did you feel that? Yeah, I felt that. Does this feel right? Yeah, that feels right. Wasn't that good? Did you feel it? You know, wasn't it? You know, and so on and so forth. And that group affirmation is very important, because you can go places with that, you know. You can take that to the next level.
Well, you can use that as a platform. And this is what I think... Okay, yeah, this is making sense. So... as all right, I'm stuttering a bit. I've got too many ideas trying to force their way through a tiny little pause.
That's good.
So the idea is that we have an ascension process that's going on, right? And there, in this instance, you were saying that Osiris was going to ascend at the beginning, but then that ascension process was kind of halted, and it was, you know, the process was retarded. It wasn't, you know, not that it was stupid, but it literally, in its proper sense, it was held back. It was governed, until such a time as, there was no time left for Isis to conceive. So she had to, you know, just, do as much as she could to get that to happen, and then presumably when all the pieces kind of get back together again, whatever life force is left in them will lock them together like magnets, and recreate the circuits, and then, you know, obviously, yeah, you didn't go nuclear because the energy had kind of drained out of it a bit.
Well, I think the key words you used there was until such a time. Now, it might have been that wasn't the time for him to go nuclear. It just wasn't in the position. It wasn't the right time.
Oh, so because there are cycles of time calendars and full moons and things like that. Yeah.
So from an organizational perspective, Seth did what he did to contain the situation because it wasn't the right time.
Yeah, and obviously that... the baby hadn't been conceived, and that had to be done at the appropriate time as well.
Probably, yeah. So, you know, at the moment, I feel as though we're in a holding pattern from a time perspective, and it's like stagnation at the moment, and we, you know, we need to get the ball rolling as a species to let everything move again. If you get me, because things aren't moving at the moment. It's just like cycle, but the cycle is not a harmonic one. It's just a monotonous thing going around, you know. So we are caught in cycles at the moment, you know, 9 to 5, 5 days a week, that kind of stuff, going to the shops on a Saturday, doing your cleaning on a Sunday, or whatever it entails. So we're all caught in these cycles, and I have seen these cycles elsewhere in the astral as well, but they're more harmonic there. But so we need to break the current cycle and the current paradigm that we're in that is very monotonous, very predictable, very not very rewarding, and move into a cycle or a mechanism that allows the pieces of the new, you know, imagine we're building a clock, and so we have all these cogs, and one cog is a collective, and another cog is another collective, and then suddenly we realize, oh, wow, I didn't realize we were making a clock here. You know, because you can see all the cogs, and you realize suddenly you've got, you know, the pieces to a clock. So we need to build the clock, you know. We need to manifest that thing so that we can put all these different cogs together wherever they may be, and then you're starting to build something, you see, and the thing that we're building is the vessel.
The vessel. Now, this is something that you've mentioned a couple of times, and I when you say it, I hear it's got a capital V. The vessel. So, the vessel. Tell us about the vessel.
Well, I didn't know much about the vessel until our conversation today, but to some extent. But it's starting to shape. It's starting to take shape. Because, you know, as you put these pieces, these collectives together, you get an amplification of consciousness and energy, you see. And that is ascension. That is ascension in the making. That is ascension happening in the moment. And that moment is itself entangled elsewhere. And the whole point is that our timelines, you see, our timelines are converging and converging and converging. And I think we've gotten to the point now where we're in a position so that our tentacles... it feels like we're in the kind of, you know, so that our tentacles are actually in all these different places to facilitate being in the right time. So although it might seem like things aren't great, I think we are actually in the right time. The time is now. The time is with us. Time is on our side. And so we're in a position now to ascend as a species. This is incredible, you know? So, you know, whereas for Osiris it wasn't the right time, it is now. And that's why it's so important we get the ball rolling, because if we don't, we're preventing our own evolution from happening. And we need to get, you know, step up to the plate and find the bravery within us, the reckless, you know, the reckless warriors within us to be able to do that, to have the courage to do that. Very important.
So, becoming really what I'm picking up, the picture I'm getting is that groups of people become a collective Osiris, coming together in one way and then organizing themselves according to right relationship and relating to the 1, 2, and 3, to the you know, the source consciousness, and then the derivatives, the first beam of light before it gets split.
Yeah. And you know,
go further and further back along the beam of lights until you finally get to the original beam of light.
Exactly. You got it.
All right. Well, that solved everything then. Yeah, might as well go now. Yeah.
You get it.
Journeys with JP. No.
But there'll be the emergence of many oversouls, you know. Not, it won't be just Osiris. And it might be that the oversoul's not on this planet. It might be just Osiris is the only oversoul on this planet. It might be there are three oversouls on this planet. And it's not until we move as a collective towards, you know, wherever destination we might, it might be another galaxy, for example, that we find the other oversoul. And then slowly but surely we'll find and rediscover each other. And it'll be like seeing old friends. Because don't forget, you know, we're all part of an oversoul, and we feel the consciousness of the oversoul. It trickles down into us. So it's like we're there also. We're all experiencing these things, you know, collectively, but also, you know, you'll know what's going on. Whatever part of that oversoul you're in, it's like your attachment to higher self will facilitate the flow of information and so forth eventually. But, you know, nothing's done. You know, there are many safety nets in place so that your consciousness is not, you know, bombarded by too much information. And this is how things also piece together. So those that are able to handle a bigger information stream will find themselves higher up the soul chain, so to speak. Yeah?
So it's
because consciousness is a fragile thing. Consciousness is a fragile thing.
Can be easily
depending on your level and ability to absorb, your what's happening in the moment from an informational perspective mm-hmm. and an experiential perspective depends on where you are in the soul line, where up the ladder you are, kind of thing.
So where you're focused in your personality, in your fear emotions, in your physical body, if you're feeling safe. I mean, you've got to go up the Maslow's pyramid, haven't you? Up to the place where you can be in a still place. You've got everything set, everything sussed out. You know, you've got your roof over your head. You've got enough food, etc. You're not worried about this, worried about that. That you're in a quite a still place. It's almost as if the only way to get to the vibration is to be really, really, really still.
That might be for some, but not for all. There is no formula with regards to, you know, there's no set formula with regards to how to get there to achieve whatever state of being you need to achieve to facilitate wherever it is you need to go or whatever it is you need to do. So for some it might be stillness, for others it might be, you know, being all over the place, having, you know, your many tentacles, doing several things at the same time. That can still be a form of meditation or you know, the energetic bubble that someone wants to be in.
Yeah, you can be, but it's still, you still need stillness in the mind. I mean, there's, you could
the thought process itself is it's kind of unnecessary, because it's like you could. What I found is that it's better to think by doing or not doing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the thought is like you don't really need it per se.
Mm.
It's more like you just need to react.
Yeah, it's
often, or not react.
You know, sometimes I kind of make myself these little exercises. Just to kind of train myself in some way, like I'm some sort of ninja trainer in my own head. Mm-hmm. And one of them was to, if I have a thought, to act on it immediately. You know, whatever it was. So if I think about going to have a pee, right, okay, get up, go have a pee. You know, I think about make a cup of tea, go make a cup of tea. So the connection between thought and reality was in a circuit. It was, you know, there was a connection between it, that there was no idleness in my thoughts, and that really helped to keep things down, because what a lot of the thoughts that we have in our heads are things that we haven't done. That's what worry is. What haven't I done?
Yeah.
So
I mean,
do that which you think, and everything will be happy.
Thought, to some extent, I think, has its place when you are hit. If you're not doing the right thing, so to speak, that's really when thought should come into play. Because it's like, oh, hold on a second, that didn't feel right, or that was a bit weird, or should I be doing that? And, you know, obviously, if you're in other words, if you're thinking about something, chances are you shouldn't be doing it. So what I'm saying is, like, what we should be doing should be much more reactionary, as opposed to thinking things through. In other words, like the Nike thing, I hate to reference Nike, but, you know, just do it, in other words. And if you're not just doing it and thinking about it, chances are you're working out why you're thinking in the first place. So it's like thinking is the mechanism to get back into not thinking.
Thinking likes itself, doesn't it? Thinking thinks thoughts are cool, and thinking is the greatest thing since sliced bread.
But essentially, it's not necessary.
Yeah.
And you'll find, and I found, you know, when you get into the moment, you're actually not thinking, you're just doing. And that feels like the right thing to do. It's like, hey, this feels great, I'm doing it, you know?
Yeah. And there are times when you're not doing. And when you're not doing, you're just being. That's the bit.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously work and play,
or
fun and play, and fun and rest, and, you know, there is, you know, I mean, who say you do what you want when you're resting, think or not think or do whatever. But when you want to, you know, when you want to come out of that state of resting and move back towards the ascension process, then I say just leave thinking behind, you know. Because and until such a time as when, if you feel that you do need to resort to thought, the chances are you're not doing the right thing, or you're doing something counterintuitive, or you're doing something that's based on conditioning, or you're doing something that is, or you're thinking because you've hit a brick wall with regards to an obstacle, or something confrontational, or something not intuitive, or not harmonic, or so on and so forth.
Or you've been triggered by a previously installed program.
Yeah, basically, yeah, that kind of thing, yeah. So, you know, this is an important realization. Because it sounds strange at first. What does he mean, you know, don't think? I'm saying, like, thinking is kind of your enemy to some extent, you know?
That's what Castaneda says.
Yeah, you need to get out of the thinking process and do. Reactionary, from a reactionary perspective. Just do. Just be. And it's as simple as that to some extent.
Exactly. Just is so hard. That's the big thing, is just, you know. I have this this little, one of my little phrases, aphorisms, is just make toast. You know, don't try and make toast and wash up. Don't try, you know, this is if you've got a old-fashioned grill. You know, don't try and make toast and make some tea. Just make toast, because anything else you do, you will forget about the toast and it will burn. Just make toast. It's like a meditation. Just make toast. Only make toast. Just, if you're making toast, make toast only. And then when you've made toast, you can do other things. But it's a kind of metaphor for life for me as well. You know, just if there's things that you have to do, it's good to do them in a focused way without trying to have a conversation at the same time. Don't text and drive. Yeah, just drive.
Yeah. And if you do concentrate on your toast, and it forms the picture of a Virgin Mary, you can sell it on eBay for 10 grand.
Exactly. And then then just making toast was very worthwhile and lucrative.
Yeah.
Filthy lucre. Anyway, so I would say that one of the objects of your existence, one of the reasons that you're here on this potential road to wholeness, which we call internet radio, is that the idea is you know, to bring all the parts together. How do you find them? You use the planetary higher consciousness, which is what we call the internet. And
yeah,
they'll find you, and you'll find them.
Sounds like a plan.
Sounds like a plan. When's your show starting?
Yeah.
Go talk to Mike.
Yeah.
There might be a few free slots. You could get one in the daytime. Get the European side.
Well, you know, like I say, it's a not seeing this manifesting, or not being in an environment where I am seeing the rapid, you know, kind of, or not seeing it happen, manifestation of the gravitational movement towards everyone. You know, we're not in the right environment. This is what needs to change. We're not, at the moment, we're not in the right paradigm. So I guess part of the solution, or the facilitation, is to create the right situation, create the right environment.
That's right.
To allow the emergence of what we've been talking about to happen.
That's right.
That would be nice to see.
That's right. And that's what your radio show will do.
Okay.
Because an environment in cyberspace is a mental construct.
Right.
You know, you frame it. You got the music that will get you in the right mood, that you get you in the right frame. You know, that's a theme tune. And, and you know, that brings everybody into the attunement of what your show's about, which is the gathering. The gathering, the regathering of Osiris. What did I call the show? Because Dave asked me for a show topic, and so I replied with something that just kind of, where's the Skype window there? And let me look at this one here. What did I call it? Dave, where are you? There we go. The Journey of Osiris to Wholeness.
That sounds pretty cool.
Sounds nice, doesn't it? So yeah. that's the theme of this show, and that's the beginning, you know.
This is, and of course, you know, we're talking about one accent, one aspect of it, but it seems to provide many clues as to, you know, where we should be heading, I feel.
Hmm. Well, you see, we've all been divided. And perhaps this is like, you know, like I was saying before, this is like God's plan and God's mistake at the same time. Because in order to see himself, he had to divide into himself and not him. And then that became two, and then, you know, all this other stuff. Everything went wrong. You know, everything from that point went pear-shaped, and it's coming down, we're coming down to the bottom of the pear, where it's all coming back together again. There's pieces are snapping together, like the suit of the Iron Man, you know, two pieces, four pieces, six, you know, it just grows from there.
You know, for all we know, we don't know how far this fragmentation has occurred. But, you know, intuitively, I think, I certainly realize that, you know, the human experience is pretty much done. We've done it. You know, we've done the human experience. So we need to introduce novelty. And if that novelty means rolling back towards collectivization so that we can move towards wholeness again, then that, you know, that would make sense, because as you move towards wholeness, you know, because we don't know how far this fragmentation has occurred. We could be talking about universal fragmentation from a creator point of view. It could be that something horrendous happened that caused the fragmentation, because, you know, we're not experiencing bliss, let's face it. So it could be that something quite catastrophic happened to create a creational fragmentation that may involve many universes. So it may be that, yes, we collectivize here as a species, we move on to another galaxy, then both our galaxies, the Milky Way and another galaxy, collectivize. And then we move on, and then until we've done the universe, until the universe is one. And then we'll suddenly, you know, we'll come across another universe, and we'll experience what's going on there. And then it's like a shuffling, so we're reshuffling, maybe. You know, that might be part of it, but certainly from a universe perspective, I think that's where we should be heading. Because we, you know, it's all about, if you're not having a new experience then something's wrong. And that's a realization in itself. So we should be having new experience. And if that new experience involves going back to source, going back to convergence, going back to reformation, you know, and I do believe that we will re-remember much of this if it happens, and I hope it does happen. But, like I say, one of the questions I've asked is, why aren't we experiencing bliss? So hypothetically speaking, the fragmentation might, you know, we don't know how far it goes. We don't. And yes, it might be that you get these oversouls together, Osiris and maybe some others, and you have like the Knights of the Round Table type scenario where you have maybe several oversouls around this that create the one unit that is the universe. You know, and they, you know, collectively might be, you know, we would probably refer to as God. But again, we, you know, that's an aspect of Creator. That unit would be one aspect. And how many other aspects there are, I can't say. There might be many. I don't assume there to be just us, just this universe.
Yeah, there's got to be. I mean, I used to joke. I came out with this random statement, which turns out to be, you know, actually more exactly how I think. It ain't true if it ain't part of a fractal omniverse, which, you know, doesn't really rhyme or scan or anything like that, but it kind of works. So if it's not part of a fractal that, you know, has a reflection in greater and smaller scale, and it's not part of an omniverse model, then it can't be true, can it?
Guess not.
Sorry.
Well, I guess maybe some of the point is, you see, it could be, again, like hypothetically, it could be we're experiencing a purging. You know, just like you know, it might be that we have a that Creator has a cancerous or has come across a cancerous aspect of self that it wants to purge itself of. So maybe, you know, it's like, oh, damn, you know, we're not experiencing bliss because we need to get rid of this cancer. So maybe, you know, the reorganization is part of removing the cancerous side of our nature so that it doesn't inhibit the process of harmonization, of finding our different songs, of the harmonics coming together to create new harmonics, new experiences. And so the evolution process carries on. And of course, that's how I see things. You know, evolution is an ongoing thing. But if one does come across something cancerous, it does need to be dealt with. And I think maybe that's why the bliss has been halted, so that we can realize the cancerous side of reality, deal with it, and move on.
Yeah, so we really can get on towards rainbows and unicorns without the fear, or without that nagging suspicion that something, we left some door open somewhere, you know. That the place is, you know, nicely looked after, and that nobody's going to mess with the garden while we're away. That's part of the feeling, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, and you know, this is the interesting thing. I mean, JP and I kind of like stumbled upon this subject to some extent, but the important thing is, this, you know, through logic and reason, you can start piecing things together. You can start seeing aspects of the picture. And that does allow one to move on from a directional point of view. And it's important. And that's why I say when you just like JP and myself have come together and of like mind, and we're sharing our information and our thoughts, it's like that collectivization leads to a higher truth. The emergence of something new that you weren't really aware of before. You might have had your suspicions, but you've clarified it, you've gelled it, and it's like, wow, we can take that somewhere, we can move on with that. And that's what happens when you get this gravitational movement towards like mind and like energy. And that's essentially what we're talking about, music. This is like manifesting music, physically manifesting. You know, it's harmonics. And this is why it's so important, and this is why you see it throughout nature, like the phi ratio, the golden ratio, cymatics, in a sunflower, you know, you name it. From an elemental point of view. And there's harmonics all over the place. And we're talking about symphonies, we're talking about, you know, what works and what doesn't. And if you allow disharmonics or malevolence or evil to rue the day, it causes disharmony. Just like, you know, if you shout and horrible things at a droplet of water, then freeze it. It doesn't create that fractal, that nice pattern. It's all distorted. Just like, what was the guy's name that did the research on that?
Emoto.
Exactly. Yeah.
I played myself down to speak. I'm an idiot.
You see, and that craziness, you know, some might have seen him as crazy for what you're doing. What are you doing shouting at a droplet of water? Are you mad? But you see, that piece of the puzzle he thought might bring fruition of some higher truth, did indeed bring fruition of a higher truth, did manifest a different understanding of reality that makes sense, that we can apply. And this is why we need to start being brave enough to go there, to do slightly crazy things. If we feel, you know, if you feel as though something, you know, you want to experiment with something just to see if it works, even if it doesn't work, you have insight. So, you know, it's like you still experience it from failed experiments because you know that didn't work. So you can say, okay, that didn't work, let's try this then, and so on and so forth. And you know, that's where I feel we need to go there more often. And that's like why Emoto, was it Emoto? What was his name again, sorry?
Masaru Emoto.
Masaru, that's why Masaru Emoto, came up with what he did. And it's amazing he's been referenced, that experiment's been referenced many times because it's an important experiment.
It proves the action of intention upon matter. It's the prime example of everything that spiritual people have been talking about. It's a scientific, reproducible proof that consciousness can change matter, and that intent can alter the pattern that matter takes on when it turns from liquid to solid. And so when it goes from the formless to the form.
Right. And it's essentially, with regards to water, it's a more fluid medium of energy. You know, at the end of the day, it's energy. When you say matter, it's energy. And water happens to be a fluid medium of energy. Or a more fluid than a rock, let's say. Mm. So, you know, when you say that term, I just think, yeah, mind over matter, mind over energy, or mind manifesting energy, or moving energy.
Mm. So you haven't got a website yet. Do you have any pages where you express your thoughts? How do the other fragments find you?
I did kind of experiment with a site called univow.com, UNIVOW, which was kind of me experimenting with, the experiment was, I felt as though at the moment in society, it seems as though we've lost the kind of sense of a template of morality. In other words, we've allowed certain things to happen in our society, like corruption and so forth. So my attempt at univow.com was to create a template of morality on which we can, you know, because people say, oh, you know, we can't agree on anything, you know. I've heard that term. You know, people say, oh, we can't agree as a species, we can't agree on anything as a species. But I disagree with that. I think the whole point is that we can agree on certain things, and that we do, to move on, to create a new paradigm, we need a springboard of morality so that we can say a kind of declaration of sorts, a constitution of sorts, but a re-emphasis of what we want to stick by. So, for example, some of the things I've got on this site is to, you know, that you should not cause harm, loss or damage to others or their property and or interests, including nations, and that our actions and intentions be humanitarian and considerate toward each other. You know, very simple in that respect, but it's something that really, you know, we need to understand and say, yeah, that makes sense. You know, we should adhere to that. Or that things like our basic human needs are met. So, for example, you know, that things like food and shelter are always there, available for us, providing that we do our bit to facilitate and contribute to our own environment. I've also got in there that society be allowed to evolve. Again, a simple thing, but that we should encourage and facilitate the pursuit towards happiness and furtherment of self, family and society. You know,
so it's a kind of cosmic constitution.
Yeah, because time and time again, when I kept thinking about it, I realized that the whole problem at the moment is that we don't have a platform. It's like, you know, if you're going to dive into an ocean of new experiences, or that you want to manifest, you need to have that springboard. You need to start from a platform. If you don't have that platform, you're just going to go round and round and round. You're never going to agree on anything. So it's like gardening, you know. If you're going to plant a new tree, you need to make sure that that seed is structurally integral. So there's no, you know, so that what stems from it, it also has the same integrity. So, but, you know, basically, you know, the whole thing is about integrity. Because if you start off from something that's ambiguous or erroneous or open to attack, then what happens is that what branches from that will also reflect the origins of what's ambiguous and, you know, and so on and so forth. So you need to start from something fundamentally understandable, something cohesive, something solid that everyone can agree on, and then from there, you see, you it's like cloning a plant, you know. But the first, you know what I'm saying? That makes sense. It's like
rhubarb.
I hate rhubarb.
I know, but you might not like rhubarb, but rhubarb behaves like a cyrus. Yeah. Oh. When you divide the root of rhubarb, you get two rhubarb plants. You don't kill the plant by dividing the root.
Right.
You see? So this is the metaphor that we can take. And that's how one species can spread around. Presumably it makes flowers and seeds.
I guess what I was trying to say.
Yeah, anyway, meanwhile, rhubarb.
If you're gonna start cloning a process of understanding or a way of being or a paradigm, what you're starting with has to be what you want to end up with to some extent, what you want to allow to emerge. So if you have, like I say, ambiguity and so on from your seed point, then everything else is going to become corrupt and not reflect what your intent to start with. So it's much like gardening, to be honest. It has many analogies with gardening.
But what I'm trying to see is, it's a bit like if I were to take my guitar and my turn on my tape recorder and play something. I could play something that was totally spontaneous. If I was completely in the moment, you know, I've got all my facilities, I can play the thing, I know how the thing works and all that stuff. So if I can give that over to my spirit, bringing that through. Ah, we're at the end of the show. Thank you very much. We're going to talk some more, my friend. Wingman, brothers and sisters, he'll have a website soon. talks about this stuff. Project Osiris is going to happen. God bless you all. Thank you. Good night. See you next week. See you on Sunday. Everbeyond.info.